So another very, very rogue one, Marnie. This is wild because you're in a hotel room and living the life, living the dream up on you're in Queensland, right?
I'm on the Gold Coast. I miss you. This is the second week in a row we've recorded the podcast apart and I don't like it.
No, it's very strange and I'm starting to get abandonment issues because of that.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's something we'll
be back
talk
together
about
soon enough. Yeah.
I just don't know anymore. 2 weeks in a row is, you know, it hurts.
It is hard. It's really hard to go through these like trying times as well, being apart, not to be dramatic.
I know, no, it's not dramatic. Yeah. That's exactly how we feel. So we're having, obviously, on Zoom again. Next week, we'll be back to normal programming, bar Marnie's tire being flat or the plane's wing falls off or something like that.
Don't jinx it.
Well, that is true. And now if that happens, I'm going to feel awful. So,
yeah, it's literally if something goes wrong, it's your fault, okay? So
yeah,
no pressure or anything.
Yeah, all the guys out there definitely resonate with that. We have a lovely game of football to talk about. Welcome back to the pod.
Yes, lovely. I don't know if I'd use that word to describe yesterday's game, but sure, let's go for it. A lovely demolition at the hands of Adelaide Tassie yesterday. It was quite a spectacle for all those involved.
No, that is true. It wasn't as bad as last week, and people weirdly, looking at the response online, weirdly some people think it's worse, and I don't know. Like I don't know if my body is void of emotion, being a North Melbourne fan, but I kind of just it was exactly what I thought it was going to be, and it didn't hurt me very much because it's kind of exactly how I thought it'd go. I mean, I tipped 40 plus. But the funny thing is, or the weird thing is, that I think a lot of players had their best games this season and we still got done by nearly 60. So I think that just says where the club's at. I mean, look, we can point to individual performance, which we've done for the last few weeks. But I think realistically, it's not the individuals per se. It's the overall caliber of the squad, which I understand can come down to individuals, but it's the coaching and the scheme of everything at the moment just seems to be really letting us down. I know you were incredibly intoxicated instead of being present while watching the game. Do you want to tell everyone how that occurred?
Don't out everyone on my secrets.
I was getting drunk messages from Marnie, guys. This is the dream.
Yeah, so as everyone knows, I'm here on the Gold Coast, and I'm not really one to drink much ever, let alone when I'm watching the footy. But it's been 25 degrees here every day, and made some friends at the pub, and a couple of my friends came down as well to the Gold Coast to watch the game. And, you know, after quarter time, there wasn't really much to smile about, sadly. So we turned to another coping mechanism in white wine. I think the thing with yesterday's game is there's two things for me. First of all, I think we had such a high expectation riding in on that Hawthorn game last week. I went in thinking that would be our first win of the season. I know you thought so too, and I think there was a lot of pressure surrounding that game. So I think maybe we kind of had our hopes ruined last week. So going in this week, we probably weren't. I mean, I went into this game thinking that we were going to win. And at the start of a couple of weeks ago, I said to you, look, maybe get someone else on the pod this week to do the review with you because I'll be away. And like, it's annoying to do it again over Zoom. And then I called you during the week. I was like, no, I'm coming on because I'm not missing out because we'll win.
Just in case.
Jokes on me, right? But the other thing I think is that it was in Tassie. So I always feel a little bit more detached from obviously I'm such a passionate supporter as are you, but I always feel a lot more detached when I'm watching the game on TV, in particular at a pub in Broadbeach, like let alone at my house or at yours or whatever. So I think those two things combined for me probably softened the blow of the result a little bit. And in terms of the actual game itself, I'll be honest with you, I don't really remember much of yesterday's game. It was a lot of the same stuff that we've seen, really. And as you pointed out, and as I've pointed out multiple times throughout the year already, it's a team issue. It's a systems issue. I don't think it's a, there are players that we will speak about who probably aren't good enough, to be honest. And we really need to start talking about their future in the side this season and then beyond this season as well. But I think most of what I got out of yesterday's game was sort of the fallout after the final siren, upon reflection, and then also just sort of things that happened in the hours after the game, which is where kind of I've taken most of my observations from and what I'll be looking for when we face St Kilda back at Marvel next week.
Yeah, so maybe we'll do this as chronologically as possible. What did you think of the team selection? Obviously, a lot to talk about after the Hawthorn game, and we were calling for blood, we were calling for the axe to be swung. What did you think when we saw Sellers out, Wardlaw in, and Hardiman debuting as well? Who went out as well? Who got omitted? I can't
Eddie
remember.
Ford. Eddie That's Ford is injured.
Eddie Ford injured, yeah.
Look, I mean, I've said this quite a few times this year, and I mean, we're probably getting to the stage now where this comment probably becomes a bit irrelevant and we can probably start to make more changes. I've said to you that I would avoid making too many changes unnecessarily, just give this team sort of an opportunity to gel as a 23, bar injury or making necessary changes, you know, either out for injury or out for suspension or coming back from injury or back from suspension. So Wardlaw, we obviously rested, so it was great to see him back. Eddie Ford injured, so obviously he was he was left out of the side. Then you've got Sellers and Hardiman, but that's for that change. But I think, you know, probably after the bye, I think that comment sort of becomes irrelevant, and I think we do need to start making a lot tougher calls. Unfortunately, you know, we there is a lot of personnel issue, in my opinion, at the club at the moment. But the biggest thing for me is that there's just too many players who are underperforming. I mean, that's just the bottom line. I mean, you could point to so many things that are going wrong, but it's really just players not performing. I obviously can talk black and blue in the face about why I think Hugh Greenwood should be playing, and there were two instances that came out of the game yesterday for me that further validated this point. I'll throw Liam Shields back in that conversation as well. But, yeah, look, I mean, I think the changes were good and the ins were good, but I think that there is room. There's going to start to be a bit more room for more in the coming weeks.
Harsh on Sellers, you reckon?
Harsh on Sellers because there was no one brought in to really replace him in that role. Like Eddie Ford, obviously missing with a hip injury. And then there's no Callan Coleman-Jones, and then there's no Greenwood either. And we are waiting.
Except Finbar.
Well, we're waiting for Finbar. I think we'll see him second half of the season probably. If we do see him this year, I just don't think it's worth rushing. I mean, we've obviously brought, I mean, Sellers was pushing for selection, so I've got no issue with them, you know, selecting him to take on Geelong. But, you know, on the flip side, did we rush him in and now are we going to make that same mistake with Finbar? Probably avoid it, to be honest. If we can avoid making that mistake twice and learn from it, then I think we should. I'd be more than happy to see Sellers come back in at some stage later in the season, just give him a little bit more time in the VFL to kind of just get a bit more game time under him and then, you know, revisit that in the second half of the season. But the forward line seemed to actually work okay yesterday when we got it in there and we got it down properly. We were scoring, which was nice. And that's obviously, we haven't had
45% disposal efficiency into the forward line, which I assume is, we're usually sitting around 30 to 35%. So I feel like that might be our highest for the year. Still not enough shots or anything like that, but
it's not enough.
It's better.
And obviously a lot of turnover and a lot of Adelaide's goals did come from our forward half as well, which again is something we've seen for the, you know, the entire season.
Yeah.
Brian. but we did score. We were scoring. Our score was a lot higher than it has been the last few weeks. So weirdly enough, that's a positive coming out of that.
Yeah. What do you think about Hardiman coming in? Well, first question, did that excite you that he was gonna play? And did that make you think that there would be changes made in the back line, like Sheasel in the midfield and stuff like that, which has been all the talk?
Yeah, so look, it was look, he's so sweet, and he actually played really well yesterday. I was really impressed with his game, for a first crack at it. I was surprised that they were going to go for another debutant, though. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I was sort of surprised, and but I wasn't mad at it either. Do you
No,
know
I
what I mean?
think, yeah, I know what you mean. Like, you know, I said on the preview, like, give Hardiman a crack, Archer and Bergman, get them all in there because we need defenders. And, you know,
100%.
this is the thing that I feel like after watching the game, and this is going to sum everything up way too early in the podcast, but hey, we're pretty rogue around here.
Yeah, we do it live.
The only thing offensively that I really dislike is how we enter the forward 50. Yeah, we were like positionally we need another key target and that sort of stuff, and the midfield can be weak. But like once we get the ball, I don't really have too much of an issue with our forward half of the ground. It's the back half trying to play a very attacking style right from the back line doesn't excite me too much, and I think that's why we get left open so badly. And I really wanted to see more changes. Hardiman was the type of player I guess we didn't know exactly, but you know what they've told us about him from the draft and where he plays in the VFL and that sort of stuff. We were sort of like, yeah, that's the sort of player. But Bergman and Archer probably deserve a chance in front of him because they'd be on the list longer. I'd like to see nearly all of them in, to be honest. But I
Yeah.
was excited about Hardiman. And you're right. Well, he did play very, very well. I think even the first quarter, he was sort of like, okay, he looks like a player here, you know, being able to, you know, be decent around the ball and get the ball and good disposal most of the time or making a decision. You know, players like that in the back line, we seem to be trying to switch the play a lot more. Well, from zero to like a
Yeah.
few times, it still isn't great, but it's
Better
still better than what we've been doing.
than
So,
nothing. We're clearly trying
exactly.
something.
So yeah, he was really, really good. The first quarter especially, the whole game he sort of did his thing. But yeah, I
Yeah.
thought he was really, really good the entire game, and looks like a player and looks like a defender that's got a little bit of about him. What did you think of his first game?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And like I said, I don't know how much I can really contribute on the game itself. I'll be completely honest with you all.
That's fine.
But no, I think he did some really nice things, and I think he worked really well in the back line. I think that he See, and it's funny because we got slaughtered once again, but like Colby McKercher, probably it's another guy we could talk about. He probably had his best game of the season. He was everywhere, and he in the last 2 weeks he's really come into his own. I feel like the growth from McKercher has just kind of gone from not zero, because he's been building nicely, but I feel like the last 2 weeks he's just skyrocketed. And I think that just maybe a little bit more freedom, a bit more room to move. And so you've got Hardiman, and then you've got McKercher working really well there together. Obviously, it allowed Sheath a bit of freedom to push up the ground a little bit more. I mean, look, I think that there was, in terms of numbers, there weren't a lot of players on the ground yesterday that actually had really high numbers, but I think he had enough of an impact in his first game. And I'd like to see him stay in the side. I think he's a good fit down there to allow Harry to push up forward. And what we do with Zach Fisher, or what we do with Zach Fisher next week, I'm not sure. Obviously, he was the sub yesterday. So whether he stays in that sub role, whether he also pushes up forward, whether he goes down back, I don't know. But I think Hardiman definitely did enough for me yesterday that I'd have him in there again next week.
It seemed to look like to the game that Bailey Scott no longer down in that back line anywhere near as much. I mean, I think as far as I can remember, he started on the wing and we saw him up the ground a lot more. Once again, didn't accumulate heaps of the ball. Barely anyone did. And that's something we'll get into a little bit later. But it seemed to allow some changes to happen, but we still saw Shees starting off half back. You're right, it did get him to push up the ground more, and we got to see him further up the ground, but he was still back there defensively. I guess a guy like Hardiman coming in, it's really good to see that Bailey Scott, you know, isn't in that back line anymore, because I think we all can agree that's the biggest glaring, you know,
It's not
awful
working.
decision or coaching dilemma that we've got, because it just didn't work the entire time. And look, you know, you've got to trial it and you know, well done for trying to innovate, but at least they seem to have realized that and made the change, because you know, Hardiman, you know, in one game did more than Bailey Scott did in defense his entire season.
And that's not that's not a knock on Bailey Scott, and it's
he's just never done. This is like Stevenson in the back line in the David Noble era. It's like, well, what do you want him to do?
Yeah,
like
everyone what are you can doing? Say,
Jaden Stevenson's entire. And look, Jaden Stevenson was bad. Has been bad this year. That's why he's in the twos. But last year, I don't think Steve-O was that bad. But everyone I talked to,
he had a good start to the year.
Yeah, his entire personality, his entire perception from the public is he's atrocious, and we're all like, he's not that bad. Like last year was actually right. But the only reason people think that of him is because they saw David Noble put him in the back pocket and, you know, him kick out to Buddy and Buddy kick it over his head. Other than that, you know, he was a lot better when you put him down in the forward pocket. Obviously this year he doesn't warrant selection. I'm not saying that, but you know, what a surprise. You put guys in the positions that they already have thrived at and they're better.
Wow.
That's what we got a four-time really premiership coach for those big decisions.
Well, Josh, let me flip it on to you because I hand on heart, openly can say that I can't really contribute much to the actual conversation around the game.
Ask me, Barney.
With the exception of like a few talking points, which we'll get to. What did you think of yesterday's game? I know you said it was kind of, you didn't think it was that bad. That was kind of what you expected. But, you know, in terms of like key pointers to take away from that game, like what did you think?
Well, you know, yes, it was bad in the spectrum of what we want the team to be. I wouldn't debate against that. Did it feel as bad as the Hawks? Nowhere near. We had a lot of good passages of play. I think a lot of the guys we've been looking to call out, like LDU and Zerha, had their best games of the season. Okurcha had his best game of the season. I think Simkin had his best game of the season. There's lots of players. A lot of more senior players that really, really stepped up and did something. But what we can see is even if they are playing better, like LDU, that game was better than all of his other games combined this year. He was tough in the middle and he won the ball and he looked way better. Clearly, it's not an individual's problem. You know, Zerha not being very good or LDU not trying very hard this season isn't the reason why we're losing by that much. It's disappointing and he needs to be way, way better because he should be learning to be a leader. And, you know, as people stated through the week, Zerha and LDU not being in the leadership group is concerning with the age demographic of the list and them not even looking like they'd want to be around it. Counterpoint to that, to play devil's advocate, is Goldstein was really never in the leadership as well. I think I was listening to hashtag Kangaroos with Dean and they were talking about that as well, which is a fantastic point. So look, I really do think that like putting 80 odd points on the board for a team of 19-year-olds and having the patches of play that we did is decent signs. We just can't stop the scoring against us. Like we're scoring fine. Like 80 points in this day and age for a team of our experience, which is basically none, isn't bad. Just the other way is atrocious. So, you know, I'm trying to keep my mindset in the perspective of where this team's at. We know we're in that sort of 2007 to 17 demon style, you know, rebuild right now. And there's no escaping that. And we can sit here every week and complain about it, or we can accept the reality. And like you've said many times, focus on the little things like the McKercher run last week, like McKercher's game, like LDU playing better, like Hardiman's first game. These are the things we have to take because we're not going to win. We're winning two or three games max this year. I'd love to. I'd be shocked if we won two. So, you know, that's just the way it's going to be and we can't control that. So you've got to find the little nuances in it. And that's why I'm not completely devastated by this performance because it's just where the team's at and I accept where the team's at. I still believe in the future. You loved my epiphany that I had on the preview podcast, which was fantastic.
I was living for it. If anyone hasn't listened to the preview pod before this game that was released on Friday, please go and listen to Josh's epiphany because I just sat there and I was like
a proud mum.
What happened to Josh? Someone's taken him and like put my Delulu positive brain in his head. It was great. Yeah. I loved it.
No, absolutely. But it's true. Like, you know, North Melbourne's awful, Marnie, and we're going to be good one day, but they're one of the worst clubs in AFL history right now. And if we want to pretend like they're not, then go on. But like, you're going to be very disappointed every single week. If we really, and this is sort of the thing at the start of the season where, you know, this is why I've got the reputation question of being the negative one is because I feel like I'm so planted in realism that I'm not allowed to dream. And is that bad sometimes? Absolutely. But is that also for moments like these kind of good? Absolutely. Like I don't. The only game I've been hurt by this year was last week. Other than that, it's kind of what I thought it would be like, bar the Fremantle game, maybe. You know, this is a 3 to 5 year process from now. Not we all say, right, and I think I said this last week, but I can't remember. And tell me what you think of this. We all say that the rebuild year one of the rebuild was Clarkson's first year. And I agree with that. So why don't we act like it is? If everyone in the fan base agrees with that, but we act like, oh, it's been 5 or 6 years of this, we can't have it both ways and you can't think both things. If it's year one of the rebuild, it's year one. So that being said, our coach coaching, 11 games or 13 games or something last year for us, I don't know what it was, but not very many.
Yeah.
Then he's coached 6 or 7 this year. So he hasn't even got a season of coaching this team. That's the mindset I've got on it. We've got a coach that's not even 12 months of games worth of experience with this list. He's had one window to bring in and trade out players. And I think we all agree the drafting was very good. Fisher's going to be a good player for us. He's just not playing in a bad side. What do you want him to do? And we'll talk about Fisher in a second being the sub. But, you know, Dylan Stevens, the dude's still 22 years old. He just played his 50th game. He can be better. I didn't think he was bad once again yesterday. I think he's just there. When he's got the ball, he does decent things, but he's not finding the ball. But apparently neither is anybody else in this team. So this has been a long rant, but like this is kind of where I expect us to be at. I've accepted our place in history right now. And we're going to look back on this in 2030, whatever, and be like, do you remember the 2020s when we were just the pits? And I'm excited for that day, even though it's probably 5 or 6 years away, but we're all going to be North fans if we're at the top or the bottom, Marnie. So we may as well make fun of it while we can. And that's why Further North is here. That's why Closer to a Flag is here. And that's why we can all listen to the pod and, you know, come to Bay 29 and hang out together and just laugh at ourselves because we are that bad. But hey, I think admin 2, Close to a Flag, said at the Fremantle game, he turned to me and the other guys and went, I'm so excited for the day where we look back and go, do you remember when we had Toby Pink and Callum Dawson in our back line? And that's not a knock on Callum Dawson, those guys, but it's true.
No, disrespect, boys. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I don't know. Yesterday was exactly how I thought it would go. You know, I think there was improvements, but it's not a let's – I think they competed well enough yesterday. I don't think we can say there was no effort. We're just bad. We're just a bad team and we need a lot of time. And in 3 to 5 years, that's when I'm going to try and judge this team. It's so far down the line. I'll be mid-30s, which is – now I've said that out loud, incredibly terrifying. But
– yeah, great.
You know, it's where we're at, so we can accept it or not. And like I said, we're going to be North fans if they're on the top or the bottom, so we may as well ride the wave.
100%. And I think, you know, when the tide does turn, it'll be that much sweeter for us having gone through, you know, the real bleak sort of period that we're going through at the moment. It's a really interesting point that you make, and I've never really stopped to think about it, that, you know, obviously we all say, yeah, the rebuild sort of started at the start of last year when, you know, we played West Coast in round one last year when Clarko took over and he obviously missed half of last season. I just think people are hurting, to be honest.
Absolutely. And that's completely valid as well. I'm not saying to not feel that way, but we can't say the rebuilds started with Clarkson and then be like, and you can be upset about it, but you can't be like attacking the players or saying awful things about everything if that's what you believe. You know what I mean? Everyone is valid to feel hurt and it sucks. The last 5-6 years has sucked. I haven't enjoyed much of it at all, but you know, we really have to make sure our mindset is this is year. It's probably year one now with what Clarkson went through last year and that sucks, but you know, that's the mindset we have to have to get through it. Otherwise we're going to be a very depressed fan base.
I think the fans, I think people are just really hurt. And I think unfortunately, you know, Clarko and Todd Viney and Sonia and Jen are just sort of picking up the pieces that were left behind over the last 5-6 years of even longer, to be honest. Probably there was a really good article in the Herald Sun today. And we spoke about, you know, the day that Boomer and Petrie and those guys were sacked essentially. And that's kind of, for me, that was the beginning of the end. And I mean, we had a few seasons in there, which, you know, actually weren't that bad when you kind of reflect on it now. I just think the one thing that, and I've said this a few times, and, you know, I always, there's ways to go about expressing how you feel. And a lot of it is pain and hurt and anger from a fan's perspective, talking about. And I don't think that abusing the players themselves is, or it's really not going to do anything. But I think fans do need a platform to be able to express their anger and express how they feel. Last night there was a post put up, which I do want to talk about later. Luke McDonald fronted the North media team a couple hours after the game. And it was published on all of North social platforms. And unfortunately, a lot of the comments were deleted off the Instagram video. And I think that these are, yes, I think people really need to watch what they say and how they say it and how they communicate their messages and how they get their points across. But on the flip side, I think the club really needs to allow fans to A, express how they feel, and B, kind of come together as a fan base. I mean, if we can't communicate with each other, and if we can't express how we feel, and if we can't encourage the fans to unite as one, how are we ever going to get through to the other side as one? Yeah. You know, North is a small club, and we have got such a big heart. And I think that's what makes us so different from every other club in the competition. We've got a rich history and we're very proud history. I'm not saying that the other clubs don't, they absolutely do, but we've always been the battlers, always had this back against the wall sort of mentality, and sort of that sort of dogfight sort of mentality that I think the club as a whole has always kind of adopted. And so I think the fans really need each other right now. I think we all really need, and I've said this before that multiple times on this podcast, that as a fan base, we really need to unite, and we need to kind of be stronger together to get through this passage and to get through this time. But I think the club needs to find a way to encourage that rather than discourage that, and rather than, like, you know, tearing people apart. And like I said, like I've just said to you, and like you've just said, there is a way to communicate, and there's a way to get your point across. And, you know, there's a really, I think fans need to take on a bit of responsibility as well as to how they do act and how they do talk and how they communicate. But I think the club equally has a responsibility to let people air their grievances and to let the fans, like I said, unite together through what is a really difficult time. I just don't think that deleting comments on social media, while yes, I think moderation is required, especially the longer, unfortunately, you know, the longer this form goes on, and the harder things do become to watch on a weekly basis, I have no doubt that there's going to be more anger, and there's going to be, you know, more choice words used to describe performances and players and things like that. So obviously moderation is required, but we need to find a way to, yes, control a little bit of the language that's used and things that are put out there, but also encourage fans to unite, because ultimately any football club, the fans are all they've got, and without the fans, there's no football club.
I agree. I mean, look, I don't have a problem with a club deleting comments if they're personally targeted. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Moderation is required. It's fine. For sure.
But you're right. I think it is on the fans as well to not say those sort of things. You know, obviously they wouldn't say these things to the players' faces. They only say them because it is online. But that's also, you got to look at it from both sides. That's the world we live in. That's social media. That's what the internet is. But also, you know, the club's got to have a duty of care. Individuals have to have their say, but rightly and not in the wrong way. And, you know, the internet is a wild place. And I think that's why everyone should use us to vent when we play the voice messages and that sort of stuff. And, you know, I've talked to so many people in the messages over the last week or so. And I don't know, like we've said, a lot of people have said nice things about the pod, and, you know, hopefully this brings a little bit of balance, or, you know, perspective to how everybody is feeling. I'll go through a couple of notes on the game. We won't cover the game too much. I think, you know, we'll cover a lot of the positives. I'll say a couple of the negatives, but I think Dersma looked really good. Dersma had a change of role, starting deeper in the forward line, and that suits him so much better. I said last week that the times I'm seeing Dersma is on the wing and half back trying to take hangers, but what a surprise. You put a dangerous, exciting young forward down in the forward pocket and he's near the goal and he creates goals. So I thought that was
He looked good yesterday. He did look good. And he kind of created something out of nothing. He had a bit of that hunting sort of instinct about him yesterday. And I do agree. He also did take a couple of really nice marks. So maybe that change of role did give him just an overall confidence booster. But I do agree with you. I thought he was, his most complete performance to date, definitely.
Simkin, I think, was a lot better. Still wasn't great. I'm not saying he was. He was probably a 5 or a 6 out of 10 for me, but he looked more engaged and he looked like he's getting back to what we know he can do with his sidestep, his clean pickup off the ground, you know, his handball disposal and that sort of stuff. I think, you know, after that big concussion, building back, hopefully he's building back into the season. I think he should have been better already. It's been long enough since he got hit. I've been concussed a couple of times in junior footy, but, you know, I don't know what it's like at that level. So I think he's looking better. And next week against the Saints, I would like to see another step up from him as well.
Well, it seemed to me that he actually spent a lot more time in the middle rather than that sort of half forward wing sort of role, that outside role we've been seeing him play since he's come back into the side. So I think, you know, credit to Clarko for throwing him in the middle. I thought Simkin was quite good yesterday. He didn't get a lot of the ball and his possession wasn't the cleanest. But it's definitely the intent was there, and it's probably the first time this season I've really seen he was involved in everything. And he was throwing himself, you know, passionately into the ball and into the play. And that as a co-captain and someone who was voted in as co-captain for that on-field leadership role, I think he really, it's the first time I've seen him deliver anything close to what I'd expect him to be delivering on a weekly basis. So I think, yes, I do agree with you. And I know I was roasted. I tweeted about that during the game and I was roasted for that. So love that for me. But I thought that, you know, it's definitely the best. Rightly, as you said, Josh, there's still a long way for him to go. I think what we expect from him, but it was a really, really good start. Very encouraging signs from him yesterday.
Bobby McKercher, let's just talk about him for a second. He is definitely his best game. You're right. He was everywhere, highest disposal getter on the ground. The kid looks exciting, and this is maybe what we're lacking. You know, obviously all the Eagles fans, they've had a couple of wins. It's been great for them and I'm jealous of that. But, you know, Harley Reid is really the reason why they're all excited. I guess we haven't really had a game like Harley Reid had against the Dockers with one of our young guys, but this was probably the closest thing we had to it. McKercher really showing the class, the disposal on the kid is fantastic. Like if he's kicking the ball, I'm really confident he's going to hit a target. The explosiveness, we saw his run last week. But this was the first week he's been able to find the ball consistently.
Yeah. No, I thought he was really, really good. And I think it's being able to just kind of hold your own, especially coming off half back. And I know that he's got more of that attacking role like what she's had last year and he's sort of started with this year. But yeah, it's holding your own in a back line where the ball is coming in at a frenetic pace under not a lot of pressure either. So I was really impressed with his game yesterday. I thought he was probably, alongside LDU, probably our best player.
And it's hard to – she's was setting such a high bar last year from year one. Hoping for that for Colby. And if he doesn't quite – I think we said this at the start of the year. If he doesn't quite get there, it doesn't mean he's not – you know, as exciting or anything like that.
She's at
the highest bar arguably in history. So, look, seriously, really excited about Colby. And I think he's looking more comfortable at the level. And yeah, I think this kid's going to be really, really good. And that's something that North fans sort of have to hold on to. Like you just said, 100%. Then LDU as well, just before we go to some voice clips, LDU talked to me about his game. I thought he was winning the ball out of the contest, a lot more ferocious, got forward to kick a goal, just looked more engaged.
he was impressive. He was impressive yesterday, and he very much led the charge for us out of the middle of the ground. It was nice. He had similar numbers last week, but I think
it's the impact.
When you watched the game, it's the impact that he had. And it's, you know, I am at this point with North. I say this absolutely round seven. I'm at this point with North at the moment where I understand the skill level might not be there, right? But you don't need to have good skill to show up every week and give 100% effort, intensity, you know, that sort of thing. And I think that is all we can really ask for at this point. The skills need work, absolutely. The team needs time to gel. And yes, there are individuals that do just need to improve on their game as well. But I think week in, week out, the things that we should never question and the things that should always be there is 100% effort and intent. And unfortunately, that hasn't been a consistent thing for us over the last 7 weeks. But yesterday's game, for me, from the bits and pieces that I do remember, there was probably the more than I've seen in the past from some players, but then less from others. And so I just think that that's got to be an inexcuse. That is something that, you know, it's a non-negotiable every single week. You go and you front up every single week. And I don't doubt that we do, just sometimes the naked eye doesn't come across as obviously as we would like it to. But I think, yeah, that's definitely, I noticed yesterday LDU looked completely different to how he's looked for most of the season. It definitely felt like he just sort of took a bit of responsibility for himself yesterday. The result of his game speaks for itself.
I think that's the bar for me for him. That's where he should be, and that's why we've said all year this is the talent he's got. So that's the bar he should be at every week, and I want to see that performance or more for every week for the rest of the season from him.
Absolutely.
Let's go to some voice messages now. FurtherNorthPod@gmail.com if you want to send something in. Thank you again, guys, for sending them all in. I always get worried that, like, no one's going to send in any voice messages this week because
we love hearing from you guys. It definitely makes our day.
Absolutely. So we'll drop them all in here, and then we're going to come back with some more points about the game, and then Marnie's got some points for some off-field stuff, Sean Attlee Club Champ votes, and then we're going to finish it up, guys. So we'll be back in a second.
Josh, Marnie, North are a bit like this. They're like two muffins sitting in an oven. And one muffin turns to the other muffin and says, "Gee, it's hot in here." And the other muffin goes, "Ah, a talking muffin." You see, they're just not on the same page.
Week after week over the past 5 years, I've somehow managed to hype myself up going into the game thinking that we have a chance of winning. And I finally accepted that we're going to lose. Going into this game, I knew we would lose. I knew we didn't have a chance. And it unfolded exactly how I expected. The players looked like they didn't care. We didn't change anything. We didn't make any improvements. And we lost as expected. If we keep it up, I can't see us winning a game this year.
I've discovered the best way to numb the pain of watching North Melbourne is to get a tattoo while watching North Melbourne.
Hi everyone, some great signs, effort was there, the youngsters, Sheasel, McKercher, Hardman did great first game, Curtis in the mid was, well, I think worked, for some physicality, and who's ready for the Webster v Simkin grudge match?
Josh, Manny, Annie here, unbelievable, you know, this team, it's crazy, they're running around like a bunch of sissy Nancy men, get the ball, put it through the big sticks, it's not too hard, is it? I'm yelling on the TV.
Hey Josh, hey Marty, Jen here. They should let us members and fans into the games for free every week if we have to continue to watch this shit.
Hey guys, I think that was the best game that our youth have played together. Still need to learn to play as a team, but definitely the best game. If we can keep them together, then in a few years, we will be unstoppable.
I'll start with a few positives. Wardlaw, McKercher, Sheasel tried their guts out all day. Changes were not enough. There's just nothing there. There's no fight. Where the fuck was Archer? Ranking took that away from us within the first fucking half. If we had had Archer, that would have been different.
Groundhog Day. Same game every week. Same presser every week, stick the course. What is the course anymore? Does anyone even know? My dog's too scared to come inside. My beer fridge is empty. Oh, I'm lost.
Man, I feel like we've been so shit for about 5-6 years now. Bottomed out, haven't come through with the goods, haven't really picked up the pieces that we need. Frickin', we've gone through the midfield the last 6 years, yet we're getting smashed out the midfield by fucking, on paper, worse midfields. So it makes no sense whatsoever.
Thank you for all of the voice messages once again, everybody. Passionate fans, many rants, but hey, we're here right now to enjoy it. And that
we're
is
here
the
for
platform.
You guys. We're here for you.
Yeah, that's the better platform to express your angst on. Instead of North Melbourne's socials. So I got a couple of negatives from the game, trying to do some different things, not just going to point out the ones that are there every week, but we'll brush over things quickly, and then we're going to go to some things off the field. So every team knows that we're going to kick long into our forward line. The amount of intercept marks in our forward 50 yesterday was out of control. Teams set up knowing that we're not going to lead. The week before when we were there, I watched us probably present 2 or 3 leads the entire game in the forward line. Larky doesn't really lead much anymore. Curtis doesn't really lead much. And even if they were, we wouldn't be kicking it to them anyway. So that's the biggest, this season with the players we've got, that's the biggest hole for me, especially in the offense.
100%. I think we need
better system and personnel, I guess, down back. But I can't believe how predictable we are going forward. And
we're just so stagnant. Like, this has been years and years. I mean, even, you know, when we had a defense that was able to hold up, it probably wasn't as big of an issue. But it's always been an issue, is we're really stagnant. I mean, bring back the magnetic ball. Like, the chaos, lowering the eyes, like, it seems to work so much more. And the issue is that if an opposition player doesn't mark the ball in our offensive 50 and it comes, like, if the ball comes to ground, there's no one on the ground either. Everyone's flown up in the pack, and then, you know, there's no one left to pick up the pieces behind.
Yeah, because we're predictable, and they know that's going to happen. They just sit behind. This is what Hawthorn did last week. We kicked it long, and there was 3 Hawks behind the pack every single time. 1, 2, 3 handballs around our couple of people who bothered to chase, and then it's gone. It happens every single week. Yeah. It's wild. And I'm sitting here from my home or sitting in the stands watching this going, oh, I played, you know, up
Stop
until
doing
I was
that.
Like early 20s, and I know not to do that, or I can see what's going
Stop
on.
Doing
Why
it.
Can't these people see that?
Yes, exactly. So, no, look, I mean, we've spoken about that every week for the last 7 weeks, because it's been That's the true. Same thing every time.
Well, something else we've spoken about, every week is once it's in our defense, we cannot get that ball out of there. I don't know if I've ever seen a team struggle to get it out of our back 50 ever. I just don't.
Yeah.
There's just no getting it out. And it's the same once again, a long kick up the line, it always ends up in with, you know, unless Jerry takes his one contested mark a game, we really have nobody there that's going to be able to do it. So, look, not really much to discuss about this. I just, it's crazy how much I don't believe we'll ever get it out of our defense when it does go down.
The only way is when the opposition kicks a goal and then we just reset in the middle and go again.
Broken tackles. Our tackling pressure is so bad. You know, a couple of handballs out of the center, a couple of handballs is all it takes to get out of danger. And in the amount of broken tackles I feel like I've seen from, teams, the opposition this year is unreal. And I think one thing Clarkson did say in his press conference was the lack of size in this team. And I think that really shows, you know, Charlie Combin is by far the biggest bloke in the team. The next guy you probably don't want to run into is Bull, but he's not overly tall as well. Like, our other around 200 centimeter people, like Aiden Corf is a wet sponge in a pack. Biggie's built like a stick. Larky's got a couple of pythons on him, I guess, but he isn't very strong in a contest. Obviously, Tristan Jarre, I completely forgot about just then. My apologies. Big 5-year signing. We'll talk about that after too. So I just don't, we're not physical. And you look at other midfields, look at the Geelong midfield, look at, and this is the elite of the elite, but like Tom Green and those guys, Patrick Cripps, look how big these midfielders are. Our midfielders look like a child, but like child, is that the right word? Children?
Children.
Children. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no, this is what happens when I watch too much North Melbourne football. There's no size and intimidation about our team in any line of the park, except for Comben and I guess Tristan. Other than that, I don't think anyone is scared of the physicality from anybody. Wardlaw's tenacious, but he needs 10 more kilos on him and a few more centimetres.
Yeah, but Wardlaw's intent is there, and the reason why Camzo has nicknamed his bull is because he goes at it, you know, head on pretty much just about every contest. And that's sort of what I was saying before, is like, all well and good, the skill's not there. Like, it will come. We will be able to build that. Well, I hope we'll be able to build that skill level up. But just go hard at every contest.
Yeah, we tackle ferociously
and fearlessly. Exactly. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily – okay, obviously size maybe is an issue, but – once again, I think one thing I've just been trying to not do is dwell on the past, be it what happened, you know, with the Gold Coast. We'll talk about that last week, that win against the Gold Coast and missing out on Harley Reid, or players that we have picked up, players that we've missed out on, things like that. No point dwelling, because at the end of the day, that's not going to change the situation that we're in right now. No. It's not going to change our circumstance. So, yeah, okay, sure, we may not have the biggest side physically in terms of size, height-wise, or in terms of muscle and frame, but, you know, any small dog can yap.
Mm.
That was terrible. I don't know where I pulled that one from. But you kind of get...
No, I like it. It's the small, fluffy, white ones that always are the loudest.
Exactly, but you kind of get where I'm coming from, right? Like,
no, I understand.
Yeah, okay, George Wardlaw isn't physically an imposing frame, but God, he's the last person I would want to come head on in a contest, because he's so ferocious and he throws himself at every contest and he tackles hard and he tackles with intent. That's what we've got to do. That's what these guys have to do. So maybe they aren't necessarily intimidating or imposing in terms of their physicality and their presence, but they can be with the way they go about their football. And I think that's what we need to start to kind of drill into the players, is they need to believe they're bigger than what they are, and they need to believe that they can do it. And I think it comes back to this whole thing of self-belief, you know, and so, yeah, like, work with what we've got and make the most of what we do have. Yeah.
Mm. And that's it. Like, the least you should expect is intent. And, you know, just because we don't have the size and physicality doesn't mean we can't tackle, or should be trying to tackle and pressuring more, you know. But then there's the thing, like fast, quick guys like Lazaro, who are always kind of around there. We get sidestepped so easily and we get our tackles broken so easily. So, but look, it is what it is. This is just
I actually thought Charlie Lazaro yesterday, his attack on the ball was really good.
No, it's nothing
against his game. I actually
thought
he played really well yesterday. Yeah. Well, let's talk about someone who I'm taking over, because there's someone I do want to talk about who should be doing that. And I think there's been a lot of discussion around him this year from us, and now from the outside, is Will Phillips. Had an opportunity yesterday. He played pretty well last week, had an opportunity yesterday to, you know, take another step forward, was awful and was subbed off at the end of the game. Where's he at? Where do you go from here? Because he probably was a bit of a victim of, I guess, the game didn't really go his way either, but he, I think, struggled to make it his own. And alongside Simpkin and Wardlaw, he didn't really compliment them, nor did he stand out in that pack.
No, that is true. Yeah, I think we're all kind of getting the feeling that Will Phillips kind of is what he is at this point. I'd like to have a bit more faith and hope in him. I can't imagine – we all get frustrated that he's not playing or not getting the opportunities. There's got to be a reason behind that, and I don't know what that is.
He has had an opportunity. He had an opportunity yesterday on the back of a really, really solid performance against Hawthorn, and just didn't really Like, couldn't do much with it.
I don't know if he deserves to be dropped, though. I'd still like the. I don't think there's better options to really bring in at this current time, especially with how poor, you know, the Powell, LDU and Wardlaw midfield was. I like that midfield on paper excites me, but in the reality, it's been incredibly underwhelming. So I still think we need him around. I feel like maybe he'll be sub next week or he'll be dropped. That's probably my gut feel on it. Talking about Phillips then, what did you think of Fisher as the sub?
Yeah, I didn't mind Fisher as the sub. And you've always said that you like a sub that has dimensions and that can come on and have an impact. I thought Fisher was good when he came on yesterday, and I don't mind him as the sub. Fisher's an interesting one for me. I think that playing in a Carlton side obviously really flatters him, and I think it makes him probably look better than where he's at currently at the moment. Don't mind him as a sub, and don't think it's a bad move. And considering how well as they could play yesterday, the small defenders, I don't have an issue with him being the sub again next week.
Yeah, I don't like, yeah. I think he's a better type of sub, but I don't really want to see him as the sub. I don't think he deserved to be sub. I mean, Darcy Tucker is just the most nothing player, and Darcy Tucker shouldn't even be in the team, to be personally, if it was up to me. But how Fisher's being made the sub over someone like that baffles me. Like, Fisher is going to have more impact coming on as a sub. So as a sub, to be tactical, yes, I think he's a better sub than Darcy Tucker. If we subbed on Darcy Tucker in that game, would we have even seen anything change? God, no, we wouldn't have. So, Fisher's the perfect sub for a team that's in the finals, but we're not. So we need him to be playing because he might have a game or he's actually got experience. I didn't like seeing Fisher as a sub personally. I once again, like Greenwood is a perfect sub. I just think he offers things in positions that, you know, are actually going to be needed to be affected when we do need the sub on. Like Greenwood could have come on to play in the forward line, even though I personally don't really like him down there. He could have come in, because this is the next point I was going to make. He could have come in and played a lot of ruck because we saw so much Larky in the ruck, which disgusted me. And then he can also come on.
About that last week.
Yeah, he can also come on and replace Phillips and be a big body in the midfield. But all Fisher's going to do is come in and like he was good when he came on. This is not a criticism against Fisher at all, but, you know.
You think he's too important.
Yeah, if we're in the finals and Fisher's the sub, I'm like, okay, he's going to come on and change something. But that our problem was never going to be we don't have enough off halfback, you know, or we don't have enough run. That's not our problem. Our problem's physicality. And, you know, we just don't – bringing Fisher on isn't going to give us the defensive tackling pressure, toughness or marking ability. I'm not saying Greenwood's out, but, you know, like a difference maker in the game. So I Fisher's too talented and too big of a signing to be our sub. I didn't like seeing it personally. Larky in the ruck concerns me. Biggie went in the ruck a little bit. I'd much rather see that.
About this last week. I mean, Nick Larky, I mean, Sellers didn't play. So Nick Larky is our only key forward.
Sellers nowhere near tall enough, though. Sellers and like Greenwood are about the same height, which is terrifying.
Yeah, but Sellers didn't even play yesterday. So when Larky's taking the ruck contest, then who's he kicking it to? Like, there is there is no world this should be happening. I spoke about this last week, and you've just brought it up now. There is no way this should be happening. There is also no way that should be happening. And then bringing Paul Curtis into the midfield.
I don't mind Paul Curtis coming into the midfield. I want him to be used in the midfield like we would use Zerha. I'd prefer Zerha to be going into that midfield than Paul Curtis. But once, like, just for an element of chaos, it's perfect. I would rather Zerha do it than Curtis, but
it's not a knock on Curtis, because Curtis was really good yesterday. And it also, I mean, I don't know if this point is really valid considering we actually did score really well and we found avenues to goal. I mean, Dersma contributed yesterday for the first time probably solidly this season, and, you know, Powell kicked a couple and, you know, everyone kind of chipped in, LDU and whoever else. But you've got no Eddie Ford, he's sidelined. You've got Nick Larky is your only forward who's rotating through the ruck. Paul Curtis has been our best and most consistent forward all year. I'd argue he's probably even had a better he's had a on par, if not a better season across the board than Larky has. I'd avoid pulling him out, like, in a forward line that so desperately needs goal kickers. Mm. I mean, that is just so, that is the most obvious statement. It's basically saying the sky is blue. it's why this is again, another, I mean, everyone knows the Hugh Greenwood thing. Everyone knows. But this is another, he needs to play.
Yeah,
he has to play. If we're bringing Curtis into the middle for that physicality and for the chaos, like, imagine if Greenwood was the sub.
If Greenwood's the sub, you can bring him on and do that instead of bringing Paul Curtis into the midfield. I didn't dislike the Paul Curtis into the midfield thing there, you know. Like, I don't maybe feel quite as bad as you do about that.
I don't feel bad about it, and he played really well. Like I said, it's not a knock on Curtis.
It's more the
he
tactical played really side well. Of things.
And I don't hate it. I just wish Clarko loved Hugh Greenwood as much as I love Hugh Greenwood.
All right, Marnie, people don't want to hear this.
Play the damn man.
Okay, we're moving on. Moving on very swiftly. You've got a few notes of things you'd like to bring up. So, talk to me about a couple of things. I've got your notes here as well, so I'll bring them up. But from all the things, because we've doubled up a couple of points on your notes here.
We've kind of spoken about everything on field that I wanted to say. I think off field is sort of the thing I want to touch on after the game. We'll talk about Luke McDonald. So Luke McDonald, he fronted North's media team. He, in a video that was put out, I know I'm in the minority because, again, I spoke about this after the game yesterday and had a lot of people who disagreed with me. I really liked this from Luke McDonald.
I agree.
I think the first thing is that, again, and this is people need to kind of decide what they want and settle on it. We didn't really hear from any players during the week, which I thought was quite disappointing. Obviously, the loss to Hawthorn and the way we lost was probably a shock to a lot of us. And so to not really hear from any players was pretty disappointing. So Luke McDonald, who's one of our co-captains, he fronted North Media yesterday, and that also wasn't good enough for people. It's sort of like, make up your mind. Like, do you want to hear from players? Do you not want to hear from players? So that's kind of the first thing. Luke McDonald's a North Melbourne person. He is probably as North Melbourne as they come. Donald McDonald played for North, and now he works at the club, and he supported North his whole life, and he came through Father Son, and now he's a co-captain. I think that it's the first time I've really, and probably with the exception of Charlie Comben after Gather Round, but that's different because I think Charlie very much is on our level, and I think Charlie is very much a realist when he speaks. And I'm not saying that the players aren't genuine, but I just don't, like, Charlie's not really, he gets it. Like, he gets the fans, I think, more so than maybe, you know, what we've kind of seen. I thought this was really good from Luke McDonald. I think that it's the most real I've really seen someone, and sort of the most candidly I've sort of seen someone speak after a game. And it's sort of the first time I've ever really seen, well, so this season anyway, that I've seen a player kind of put his hand up and kind of take ownership and take responsibility for what's been going on. We've been crying out for weeks now about the lack of leadership in the side and that our leaders aren't leading. And he has pretty much put up his hand and said, there is, the leadership is not good enough and I need to do something to fix it. So, I mean, all the fans, I think, pretty much knew where this was at, and probably internally they knew as well. I just think it's the first time that anyone at the club's kind of come out and admitted it to the fans, and I really appreciate the timing of it. But now he's talked the talk, and now I want to see him walk the walk. A lot of people have actually been calling for McDonald to be dropped into the VFL. I don't think he's going to – if he's a real captain, if he's a really strong leader, he's not going to put his hand up and say, yeah, I'm going to go and sit this one out, guys. He needs to somehow dig deep along with Jai and find a way to inspire the team. Now, you've talked the talk, and now it's time to walk the walk. And he needs to bring Aiden Corr with him. If Aiden Corr plays next week, he needs to bring Nick Larky with him. Obviously, we're getting it from Sheezel. Having Wardlaw on the side helps, whether we have an element of leadership through Greenwood or Shields. I mean, who knows? But we spoke about this at length last week, and it kind of feels like everything that we said and everything that we felt has now been felt at a club level and is now being communicated back to the fans. And so I think that it was a really important presser last night and a really important video that was published, whether people think it's genuine or not, or whether people think that, you know, McDonald and the rest of the team are going to deliver on it or not. I don't know. And I guess all we can really do is sit tight and wait and see what happens next week, during the week off field and then on field against St Kilda. But I, for one, really liked it. And I thought it was a really important sort of line in the sand moment for me.
Yeah, I think Luke McDonald is always a scapegoat for this team. I don't really think he's played badly since he's come into the team. Is Luke McDonald ever going to be our best player on the ground? No, but we shouldn't expect that. He's a constant. He fights. You know, it is the right sort of guy who should be a leader. Do I think he's been good enough as a leader? Probably not. But I'd rather someone like that than to stop pointing him out, but like an Aiden Corr or even a Bailey Scott in the leadership group. I don't think they bring anything, to be honest. So, you know, I liked it from Luke McDonald. I liked that he said we need to be better, and then he sort of just straight away. You could tell it wasn't something, you know, they sort of rehearsed what they're going to say probably and that sort of stuff. Not that it's scripted, I'm not saying that, but, you know, he knows what he wants to say. But the way he said, and we will be better, seemed incredibly raw, and like he just wanted to say that, and that wasn't something he was initially going to say, but he had to say it. I liked it. It's good that someone has fronted up to something. I want it more. I don't think it's been anywhere near enough, and we should nearly get a weekly captain's press conference or something. Would be nice, to be honest. But you're right. Now it's time to, you've talked it, and now you've got to see if you can go out and do something, because what exactly he needs to do on an individual level, I don't think Luke McDonald's going to do much more on the field. But, you know, rallying the troops and giving some belief, you know, there was a, they did huddle up at the start of the game on the broadcast, which, you know, it just looked like they were really trying to lock in a little bit. And we know that the scoreline didn't represent that, but, you know, I like what I saw from McDonald, and it'll come together slowly once we get some actual leaders, you know, Sheezel, Larky, Charlie Comben. You know, a sort of the leadership in 5 years needs to have those guys in it. Simpkin, I'm happy with him as a leader, but I haven't heard anything from him. I think we all sort of see Simpkin as the captain and Luke McDonald as Simpkin's captain, Luke McDonald's kind of co-captain, but co being not quite on Simpkin's level. Yeah, I'd like to hear from Simpkin. I want to know what he's thinking, but I never really believe what Simpkin says a lot of the time. I think he's feel a lot more scripted, where Luke McDonald's feel a bit more raw. That's why we loved the Charlie Comben interview so much, and when Harry Shearer speaks, why we love it so much. And Nick Larky talking about it's easy to run off to another team when he speaks, we believe it because it's the way he presents it. Just like when Zerha did his interview and we just kind of were like, eh, because it didn't resonate with anyone. It's not about what he's saying, it's about how he's saying it. So I liked it from Luke McDonald, but we're going to wait and see what that's going to do for the team throughout the week. So yeah, we will see.
And I've got a good feeling about next week. I know people probably just want to shut up at this. I think people are starting to get a bit angsty, and I don't blame them. Like I said, I come on the podcast, and, you know, my whole mentality is incredibly positive, and I do try and, you know, look for the fun and for the good things in footy. But I've also been a fan of the club for, you know, over two decades, and it really hurts to see the club like this. But I really think we are on the verge now, because I think that there's only so much that our back can push up against the wall until we actually explode. And I think we just need one performance to tip us over the edge. That's all we need. I think we just need one performance to break open all the potential and everything that, you know, we think that this club can do. And I mean, when we started off yesterday, I mean, for the first, again, 5 or 10 minutes, North ball was on, and, you know, that first goal, I think it came from Powell. I mean, the way we transitioned the ball from coast to coast, it was unbelievable. It was actually unbelievable. And it got me so excited. And I just think, like, we can do it. We can do it. We just need We just need to enter a game with the mindset of we're in charge and we're the team here and we're going to call the shots. St Kilda played Port Adelaide on Friday night and they still couldn't get over the top of Port Adelaide, who had no rotations left on the bench. They were so injured. They were so decimated. I mean, come on.
What I would say for the Saints, it's like the Saints is probably the worst matchup I could think for our team because they can defend and
they're
can't
so
attack.
Defensive.
So the only thing we can do is attack and not defend. So we're going to make any team look great offensively. So the Saints are going to look brilliant. They'll kick 100 plus, even though they don't do that any other week. Max King's going to be back. He'll kick 7-8 or so. And they're going to stop us from scoring. I don't think it's this next game personally. It's the worst possible matchup for how we've been playing this year. I think it's going to be very similar to the first game last year, where it's one of the worst games we've ever seen, just skills wise. And it's going to be a Ross Lyon special. I just don't think we match up very well again. The only way we're going to ever win a game this year is if somehow our defense turns up a little bit and we just outscore another very offensive minded team. I don't know for sure. I'm no coach, but that's just my gut feel about it.
I think this week is, if there's ever a game, and I don't know if this will happen, so we need to wait until the team's announced on Thursday. But if there's ever a game where North has the opportunity to get angry and to dig deep and to hit that next level of, anger and fight and intensity, is this week. This week, Jimmy Webster is due to come back. He will be available for selection this
they
week.
Won't
he obviously
him, they won't select him against North.
Never. You don't. You just don't
know. I know.
But even,
I know. I just. That's my.
And
gut
if fear. and if well, if they do, there's a really great opportunity here for us to kind of unite as one. And
do you
again,
believe
as
that
a
they'll
team?
Do that though? Really quickly, like, do you believe that if Jimmy Webster plays, do you believe we're actually going to, you know, come in and fight? Because I don't at the moment, and I want them to.
I think we should. I think we should. The angry that. after Jimmy Webster, you know, hit Simpkin high, the angriest man out there was Clarko. And he should be that direction should be coming from the top down. I'm not saying to go absolutely crazy, but if this team is serious, if this team actually serious, if they're serious and they've got heart and they've got soul and they've got passion, then they should absolutely, if Jimmy Webster, you know, and I'm not saying go and hit him back and, you
know,
someone
what you
gets
mean.
Suspended
just
for 8 weeks.
You play physically in the game.
Exactly. Get a bit angry. Show that it means something to you. I mean, this is, you know, we're not all the players, and this has been a big knock on the club all year. There's been multiple times Callan Coleman-Jones, you know, when he went down, barely anyone went up to him and make sure he was okay. And last week, you know, a couple of players got into a couple of altercations and no one else batted an eyelid. This is the perfect game for 23 individuals to come together as one team, get behind your captains who clearly need support. That's the other thing is, like, it's only, and I like I said, I really like that McDonald put up his hand and took some responsibility, but there's only so much that the captains can do. It's got to come from the players too. They've got to want to be better and they've got to be, you know, they've got to want this as much as Jai and Luke want it.
Yeah.
You know
everything,
what I mean?
Everything you're saying is true. The thing I guess I'm trying to say is, will they though? Like, you're right, they should, but I don't trust that they will at all. Like, for me, what you're saying should have happened against Hawthorn and then it should have happened against Adelaide, but it
well,
didn't.
Well, this is if Webster gets, I mean, look, this is really just, and it should happen anyway, regardless if Webster plays or not, but if Webster does play, then this is the perfect time for us to take a look at Luke McDonald's talk the talk and see if they walk the walk. Because that is something, and like I've said, they could walk the walk and still not be good enough, and St Kilda could just beat us because they're the better team, okay? And that is just the reality we may need to accept as a supporter base. But, yeah, I think we've got a huge opportunity here, and it's going to largely depend on the selection table, but it might really depend on the selection table on Thursday and what happens there. But I think that there is a real opportunity for us to add an element of spice and fight into this game if that's the way that St Kilda decide to go.
Yeah. Yeah, no, look, I agree with you. I guess I don't have heaps of faith that they will do that, but I would like to see it. Now, the last point before we finish that I think we both had in the notes that we haven't brought up is the amount of disposals people racked up. So just for context for people here, Rory Laird had 34, McKercher 32, Davies Uniac 29, Sheasel 29. Our next best disposal getter was Wardlaw with 16. Now that is
so we, yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
So
seven,
we had yeah. So
sorry, I was 12. Just going to say there's 8 Adelaide players in between our third and fourth highest disposal getter. And then you just scroll down and there's just a gluttony of people getting between 14 and 8 disposals, which is insane. So we're clearly not hunting together. And we know this. We've watched the games. You know, there's always, there's never anyone to handball. We finish the link in the chain and just get tackled and kick it long all the time. But that's probably the most glaring thing I noticed when I was looking at all the stats afterwards.
Yeah, it's a hard pill to swallow. And I think it comes back to the fact that we need to start playing more as a team and we need to start communicating more. I mean, the best teams, they're always communicating. They're always talking. And I think that's something that we need to do. And I have no doubt that this is going to click. And we say this every single week, at least on the podcast. And I think we know. And I think it's just, yesterday was probably more obvious than it has been all season. That element of it. And I just think pick up the pieces and move again. But we definitely did not get our hands on the ball enough yesterday. That's absolutely a great reflection of that.
Yeah. I mean, the other glaring one is an obvious one every single week, 6 to 24 marks inside 50 and 7 to 23 contested marks. And, you know, it's the same thing every week. We've already talked about that. We've got no physicality and height in this team. And, you know, that's the real reason. When Jerry took that one mark on the wing in a pack, the amount of pressure it relieved, even as a supporter watching it, but I'm sure on the ground, just to know we're getting it past halfway is wild. And look at, we didn't feel that way last year with Goldstein as much. And now, you know, having no player on the team that can confidently take a contested mark is terrifying. So anyway, that's where we're at. And let's hope 2 or 3 years down the line, we've recruited some people that can actually take a contested mark. So,
or we've developed Sherry enough over the next 4 years that he'll be able to do more of that and improve.
Yes. Look, everyone wants to hear my thoughts on Tristan Jerry, I'm sure. So let's
for those who missed the news, Tristan Jerry signed a 4-year extension during the week. He'll stay at North for the next 4 seasons, which is great news for him.
Yeah. So we'll do this quickly, then we'll get into Sean out of club chat. We got 8 minutes left on the chat. So I like that we've extended Jerry. I personally, maybe 2 years, 2, 3, maybe max. For me, I would have liked a 2-year deal just to make sure his trajectory, which is up at the moment, keeps going that way. Tristan Jerry has had a much better season and I've liked what he can do as a player. There's still massive glaring holes in his game. If our ruckman is getting the most tackles and clearances on our team, that's not him. That's a team issue. But once again, no contested marks, not really a presence around the ground very much. But hopefully he develops that. And with the improvement he's had this season, I do believe he can do that. I would worry that, say, his development would flatline and in 3 years' time, we're still having him. We have a Callum Coleman-Jones situation. Not that Callum Coleman-Jones is worse than Tristan Jerry. And that's a sentence I never thought I would say on this podcast. And I'm sure there's many Jerry fans out there who have just got the biggest stiffies ever over that. But, you know, but this is the thing. When he was good, I'll say he's good, but he was atrocious last year. Nothing I've said about him is wrong. The only thing I said about him that's wrong is he'll never be good, but hey, I'm happy to be proven wrong. Like I said, many, many times, but, maybe a little bit long, but I also agree that a club in this position doesn't have much choice but to tie down any form of talent, especially key position talent, that we can get our hands on. So look, I'm happy with the deal. Maybe a tiny bit long for me, but I think with the position that the club's in, it's probably the right thing. And I'm assuming he's not going to be on heaps and heaps and heaps and heaps of coin, or not those gross Aiden Core dollars. So give us a couple of minutes on what you think about the signing, Marnie, and then we're going to go to the club champ, which doesn't have Paul Curtis in it. I don't know why I said Paul Curtis. And
is that a sign of things to come? Is Sean Attlee getting the boot?
No, the Paul Curtis club champ, you reckon? Maybe one day.
No, look, I do agree with you. Initially, when I saw the news, I also thought maybe it was a little bit long, considering it's been, what, we're 7 rounds into the season, and he's obviously had a really, really excellent start to the year, and I think he's been one of our shining lights. He's been, you know, probably our most consistent performer across the year. And again, this is something I never thought I would say either, but in hindsight, Goldstein leaving and allowing Sherry to kind of step into that ruck role and make it his own. Yes, he's still, you know, got a way to go and he'll still need to improve. But that's something that it looks to me that as the weeks go on, that he's going to be able to do that more and more. I initially did agree that maybe 2-3 years or maybe 2 with a trigger or something like that would have been the right way to go. But key position talent is really hard to find, and big men do take time to develop, Ruckman especially. So I'm more than happy to be patient with him, and hopefully, hopefully we will just see him continue to get better and better and better. And I am at this stage willing to back him in and think that he will. I think he's got really good work ethic, and he seems pretty determined to kind of fill that ruck role, you know, well, and to be able to serve the club well. So yeah, I think it's great for him, and I'm really happy for him.
So Sean added club champ votes this week. I have given, and Imani wasn't really much involved in this because she was so drunk that she didn't think she was valid this week. We had to void Marnie from the votes this week. No, of course not, Marnie. You let me know what you think of these votes. So I've given Colby 3 votes. I think he was the best on the ground, a little bit extra because he's young and exciting. But, hey, that's what the club champ's all about. LDU, probably next best on the ground, a good bounce back from him. And I did give Zerha 1, a good bounce back and 3 goals on the day for him. I think they are our 3 best. Other ones you can throw in there, yes, but I think they are our 3 best. What do you reckon of that?
Yeah, no, happy with that.
Unbelievable. What a surprise. I've nailed it and Marnie's not angry at me. That's crazy.
Surprise.
Miracles do happen, guys. If that can happen, maybe North can win a game next week. Who knows?
We will. We are. We're beating St Kilda. I know it's a St Kilda home game, but anyone who can get tickets, find tickets, get to the ground, we're winning. You heard it here first.
Okay. Well, on that note, guys, we're going to head off now. Thank you for listening once again. Keep peeled to all the socials and that sort of stuff because we're posting lots of fun things. And yeah, you guys know where to find us by now. We don't really need to give them the spiel, Marnie, do you reckon?
Oh, no. If you do need to know where to find us, Further North Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. And also, as you heard earlier, we play all your voice notes after every single game, furthernorthpod@gmail.com. Just in case you forgot, it's always good to give you guys a little bit of a reminder.
That is true. How foolish of me. Well, I'm going to go and think about my actions. Marnie's going to go and send me a message after we hang up here telling me she was right about that. And, we will see you guys for the preview. And let's pray to the footy gods for our time against St Kilda next weekend.
Bye, guys.
See you. Bye.